Trade negotiations between the U.S. and China resume in Washington today.
Publicly, the two sides are still talking a good game about the possibility of doing a big deal, but most people's expectations are a lot lower than they were in May.
And interest rates are falling, just not in the mortgage market.
If you've got more customers coming through the door, the pressure on you to offer super competitive pricing to them goes down.
Plus, beware of the too good to be true life hack video. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at what negotiators for the U.S. and China will be discussing in Washington later today, here's what you missed. President Trump hired former Representative Trey Gowdy to represent him. The president is growing his personal legal team in preparation for the impeachment inquiry in the House. Mr. Gowdy is a Republican and former prosecutor from South Carolina. He first rose to national prominence as the chairman of the Select Committee on Benghazi. That was a special panel created to investigate the death of four Americans in a 2012 terrorist attack in Libya. And Apple removed an app that citizens and protesters in Hong Kong had used to track police activity from its app store. The removal came after Chinese state media criticized Apple's decision to approve the app. It's called HKMap.live. From Beijing, Yoko Kobata has more.
Yeah, so the controversy around this app has been bubbling up actually over the last week or so. And how it went was Apple initially rejected this app during its review process. But that move by Apple drew criticism last week across social media in the US and in Europe. And then the developer appealed that decision to Apple, and Apple this time approved the app. But that's when really the Chinese state media and consumers began criticizing Apple. So on Tuesday, there was a very strongly phrased commentary against Apple on the People's Daily. That's the official mouthpiece of the Chinese Communist Party. And I think one reason why the state media strongly criticized Apple in China on this issue is because, you know, anything related to sovereignty in China is a very sensitive issue. As we're also seeing with the case of NBA, you know, they're clashing against the Chinese government. And that commentary in the People's Daily called this app a, quote, toxic software, and said it betrays the feelings of Chinese people.
Yoko says the situation has left Apple in a sensitive position. That's because a fifth of the company's sales come from China.
The current situation really shows or underscores the difficulty that American companies are facing these days if you're operating in China. They're basically kind of caught between the Western markets. A lot of the consumers there sympathize with the Hong Kong protesters and China. And China's been trying to bring an end to this unrest.
Apple said in a statement that it removed the app due to concerns that it endangered law enforcement and residents. And Fidelity announced that it, too, will eliminate commissions from its online brokerage. The move follows similar announcements from its rivals, Schwab, TD Ameritrade, and E-Trade. So why are all of these firms eliminating commissions? Well, it has to do with the digitization of Wall Street. That's reset many of the costs of investing. So now some of the biggest players have been in a price war to attract consumers. Now, our main story this morning. Trade talks between the U.S. and China resumed today in Washington. Already, the South China Morning Post reported that lower-level U.S.-China trade talks have made, quote, no progress in resolving the year-long trade war. One contributing factor? The backdrop for the talks has gotten more complicated. Charlie Turner has been finding out more from Josh Zumbrun.
Josh, what do the Americans and the Chinese hope to achieve this time?
Publicly, the two sides are still kind of talking a good game about the possibility of doing a big deal. But most people's expectations are a lot lower than they were in May. Back in May, when the talks broke down, it really looked like there was a possibility of a sweeping deal that was going to cover just a huge range of America's concerns with Chinese business practices. It looked like, you know, the Chinese side was going to get these tariffs perhaps taken off over time. It looked like a big deal was really a possibility. And now people are looking at thinking that a lot of those issues are probably not going to be resolved, and hopes are a lot more muted. People think there's a much greater chance of a smaller deal if there's anything at all.
Earlier this week, the U.S. added 28 Chinese companies to an export blacklist over human rights concerns. The White House says it wasn't related to trade talks, and I imagine China disagrees with that?
Right. I mean, this is one of the reasons that a really all-encompassing deal has gotten a lot harder is that there's so many more issues on the table than there were even 5 months ago. You know, there have been these new blacklists against Chinese companies. A lot of these companies were targeted because they are companies that were involved in the surveillance in Western China, where China has been behaving pretty repressively towards the Muslim population there. And these companies had helped with that. The U.S. has a human rights concern there. You know, other issues we've seen everything going on with Hong Kong, with the democracy protesters there, with China cracking down on that. The U.S., you know, kind of wants to support the Hong Kong protesters, but that adds another dimension to the issues. I mean, we saw the NBA, of all places, get sucked into U.S.-China tensions when the general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted in support of the Hong Kong protesters. I mean, it's really gotten to be a really complex table of issues. And that's exactly part of the reason that it's going to be hard for the Chinese or for the U.S. to kind of set aside all these things and say, oh, we're just going to, you know, we're going to focus just on trade. We're going to ignore all these other topics. It's actually gotten really hard to narrow the discussions in that way.
Could there be some smaller scale deal? For instance, China has resumed its purchases of soybeans from U.S. farmers. You know, would the White House perhaps postpone the tariffs that are scheduled to start October 15th or maybe ease up on restrictions against Huawei?
Right. I mean, I think that's the perfect example of the lowered expectations that we're talking about here. You know, the U.S. has made it clear that it wants to see these agricultural purchases, and China has actually started to come back into that market in the last kind of month and a half. And so there, you know, there has been some you'd call it progress on that issue. And so, you know, is there a deal where China agrees to keep up those ag purchases and the U.S. says, well, we're not going to add any new tariffs? You know, that kind of thing where they make a mini deal and they say we're going to keep working on these other issues. Maybe they never do come back and work on those other issues, and that mini deal is all we end up with.
You can find our full coverage of those talks up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to talk about mortgage rates today. That's because even though interest rates have been falling, the cost of taking out a mortgage hasn't fallen as fast. In fact, now the spread between U.S. Treasury yields and mortgage rates is higher than it's been in years. So what's happening? Anna Isaac explains.
Right. So as ever with these things, there's a bit of supply and demand at play. And a lot of mortgage providers scaled back what they had on offer last year because they were seeing a bit of a drop in demand. But then this year, they've been seeing much higher demand more recently. If you've got more customers coming through the door, the pressure on you to offer super competitive pricing to them goes down. What you're also seeing, and is important to remember, is that mortgages and their role within the wider sort of network of finance is a bit more complicated than you might first think. So investors are often after what are called mortgage-backed securities. And for them, the higher the interest rate charged on a mortgage, the more likely they are to get a good return. So if you can offer a consumer a mortgage at a slightly higher rate, even if that traditional relationship between your 30-year mortgage and your 10-year treasury yield might be getting, you know, that gap might be getting greater, you're going to keep that rate as high as possible as you can to keep investors happy on the other side who might want a mortgage-backed security.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. The Federal Reserve is set to vote on a measure that would ease liquidity and capital rules for large banks. These rules were put in place after the financial crisis, but banks have since complained that they create burdensome regulations. If the Fed does decide to ease these rules, it would be some of the most significant changes to bank regulations since President Trump took office. Andrew Ackerman has more.
The Trump administration has made it a priority to basically simplify a number of the rules. They would argue they're making it easier to comply with a number of them. In some cases, for medium-sized regional banks, they'll actually be carved out from certain requirements. So there really is a significant rollback for a number of banks. The biggest financial institutions, the JP Morgans, the Goldmans, they benefit only a little bit, but the focus here is going to be on so-called tailoring, making the rules tailored to institutions based on their riskiness and size.
Andrew adds that while no one rule change has been monumental, collectively the changes are a significant step to soften the impact of the Dodd-Frank law. Finally, have you ever been tempted to watch one of those life hack videos? You know, the ones that say you can make turquoise dye from spinach or that you can repair broken china by soaking it in milk. Wait, what? It might come as a shock that many of those videos are, in fact, not accurate. Jeff Horowitz says they're yet another example of how much of the content on social media is closer to fantasy than to reality.
I mean, in some ways, this is kind of hilarious. And you know, the case could be made that this is just like a silly story about, you know, dumb people doing things on the internet, caveat emptor. But in some respects, this is about sort of the like kind of silly content and sort of fake things that have been professionalized and turned into literally some of the dominant content producers for all of social media. And that is, I think, a more serious topic.
In fact, Jeff got in contact with one of the companies that makes those videos, First Media. He asked them about some of their viral DIY hits.
There's no disclaimer on these things saying that they're fictional. However, the company thinks of the internet, of social media, as kind of being a place where people are largely consuming this stuff because it's pretty and it seems neat, not because necessarily they're actually hoping to learn or do anything, which is probably for the best if given the outcomes of some of these things, if you actually undertake them.
So let's forget the failed DIY videos for now. Have you ever been amazed by a life hack you found on social media that actually worked? Let us know. Tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. Your comments might be used in follow-up reporting. That's What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.